Support for this program is brought to you by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Hello and good evening. Welcome to CultureQ, Radio K's arts and cultural program that has for over 5 years been dedicated to providing you with enthralling stories about the many wonders of the Twin Cities that you won't hear anywhere else. I am your host, Matt Curtis, and thank you so much for joining us. Tonight is the professional debut of the new members of the CultureQ team, producers Katie Bolin and Parker Lemke, as well as music reporter Nathan Gurdis here tonight in the studio. Each of them eager to exhibit what they're capable of in a show that promised to be intriguing, to say the least. As always, CultureQ tonight, we are covering stories that sometimes fall through the cracks. Stories about moving on, changing beliefs, and finding what you're looking for somewhere else. For the next half hour, be prepared to sink into the arts and culture of this Twin Cities and listen to it like you never have before, right here on CultureQ on Radio K.
We go two by two in preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ.
I don't want to be set up by a coworker. I don't want to date a coworker. I don't want to date a friend of a friend, because if it goes bad, who knows?
It was regional at one point. That's been destroyed by the internet. You know, we thought the internet was such a damn good idea, and it just kind of destroyed, you know, regional identity. So no, kick them out. Shut down all the big metal venues. Let us do it in our basements for like 8 of our friends.
Where do you find love and find meat and people to date? Do you find them whisking you away in coffee line at Starbucks, or do you meet them using computer screens and profile pictures? Katie Bolin cracks open the world of online dating to explore why it is so popular, yet still has a stigmatic reputation when it comes to finding love in a digital world.
Inundated with commercials and ads that tell us our perfect partner is just a couple clicks away.
It's nice to get a love letter once in a while. And boy, did we just get one at eHarmony.com. Independent research has confirmed that our passion for finding you that perfect someone works. eHarmony.com ranks first in highest number of marriages, first in most satisfied
marriages. Upload a picture, share your favorite movies, list your worst fears, and magically meet dozens, even hundreds of people who might be your soulmate. But really, do online dating websites actually help people find love? I talked with Dr. Paul Eastwick, an assistant professor from the University of Texas at Austin, who studies many psychological aspects of romantic relationships, including how online dating differs from more traditional ways of dating. I asked Paul why anybody would online date.
I think online dating provides a lot of advantages for people who are interested in meeting new partners, whether for purely sexual relationships or more serious relationships. Probably the best thing that online dating does is it gives options to people who have feel like they've exhausted the possibilities in their existing social networks. And it really gives people a chance to meet one another and a chance to meet people who you at least have a good chance of, there's a good chance that they are in fact, not taken, not in a relationship.
I online date to be exposed and meet people that I would never meet in real life.
I wanted to get an inside look at what online dating is actually like from my friend Chloe. She has tried every online dating site under the digital sun. She explains why she uses online dating sites to meet new people.
No, I don't want your number. No, I don't want to give.
thing about online dating. When I go, where do you meet people? When I go to a bar, I'm with my girlfriends. I don't want to meet the guy who's talking to me. I'm not interested. I'm trying to hang out with them. So where else do you meet people? I don't want to be set up by a coworker. I don't want to date a coworker. I don't want to date a friend of a friend, because if it goes bad, who knows? So online dating is an outlet to meet people that you wouldn't really meet in your normal life, and gives you a way to explore a city or a location and learn something new. So it's great. I love it. I am a huge proponent.
The world has changed. 1 in 5 relationships now begin on an online dating site.
Oh, hi!
And when it comes to meeting someone great online, there's only one place to go, Match.com. We've led to more dates, more relationships, and more marriages than any other
Every
site.
Every dating website ad tells us today. That this is the future. But as a society, do we believe that online dating could actually work, or is it still a little taboo when it comes to finding true love?
Everyone's always embarrassed to say they met online. So there's still a stigma. And it's certainly not as romantic as, you know, bumping into someone in a grocery store and picking up a loaf of bread and your eyes meet and, you know, love ever after. But I'm impatient, and I want love now, so I'm going to go online.
If you think of online dating as really being dating online, it would be extremely difficult to know whether that spark is there or not. But, of course, that's not really what online dating is. Online dating is a way of meeting people using these online tools.
Despite the stigma that still surrounds online dating, its prevalence in society as a way to meet new people is becoming the new normal. As an expert, Chloe offers a little advice to those of you who have not yet jumped into the world of online dating.
Get out of your comfort zone, learn something new, and find someone who might become a lover, or a friend, or a one-night stand.
For Culture Q, I'm Katie Bolin. Good luck!
Secular public academic institutions like the University of Minnesota, everything is open to debate, including religion. In this kind of environment, how do religious institutions get their message across to the college students? Young Americans that recent trends show the increasingly drifting away from organized religion. Culture Q reporter Parker Lemke set out to find out the answer.
Four missionaries are gathered around the kitchen counters at the Mormon Institute of Religion on the corner of 13th and University Avenue. Spicy Korean rice is the main course, and it's easy to mistake the small group of young adults for students from the nearby university campus, who just happen to be sharing a meal together. Their mission in Minneapolis, however, is not to obtain college degrees, but to spread the message of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
As a missionary here in Minnesota, we go two by two in preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's highly encouraged by the prophet and by our leaders all growing up to serve a mission. It's not mandatory, but many of us, we hope to do it because we love what we share. We do go and proselyte on the University of Minnesota campus. We talk to anyone that's willing to talk to us.
I also decided to go out and talk with students about the role of religion in their lives on campus, starting with Matthew McHenry.
Do you follow a particular religion?
No.
Okay. And there's anything that, like, contributed to you maybe not stopping following religion, or?
I'd probably say just, I major in history, so I learned a lot about various religious wars, genocides, etc. Just kind of disillusioned me with the idea.
Mitchell Brock had his own falling out with organized religion.
Well, first off, I'm gay, so
I didn't feel unwelcome, but I just didn't really feel a particular pull towards it. So I just kind of fell away from it. And I still have my own set of beliefs. Like, I'm still really, really spiritual, but I'm not... I don't really support... I support organized religion, but I don't follow it at all.
Matthew and Mitzel represent a growing trend among young Americans. Recent Pew Research data shows that a third of adults under age 30 in the country are religiously unaffiliated, compared to one-fifth of the population overall.
It's different than it was in the 50s and the 60s. Fewer students worship, but the ones who do worship are very active.
Craig Surley, pastor at University Lutheran Church of Hope, has long enjoyed preaching in a college environment.
The church communities are mostly made up of fairly progressive people, thinking people. Religion is a topic of conversation that fits into the larger part of their lives.
And the university has had a strong influence on the Dinkytown Church's identity.
It was established as a neighborhood congregation for Norwegian immigrants and was originally Hope Lutheran Church, and then in the 1920s, it changed its name to University Lutheran Church of Hope, realizing the expanding need to minister not only to the neighborhood, but also to the university students.
This need continues to evolve as more students move into the Dinkytown area.
This last fall, we had an event that was timed for the move-in, move-out weekend, you know, when students... leases are up and they're moving out and new students are moving in. So we had live music on the patio. We had a meal offered, a free lunch that they could come and sit and relax.
Personal interactions also factor strongly into the way the Latter-day Saints missionaries spread their message, according to Lee Sing-hung, a missionary from South Korea.
And we talk about where they're from and why they are here, what they are majoring in, and what's your goal? What are you looking for to feel the future? And why we are here? And what for? And there are a lot of questions that they give us, a lot of challenges. And that helps me understand how can we deal with it for the future. And that's really good advice for us, for all of us. And I really appreciate it for the student talking about their life.
The responses they receive are largely positive.
Some are surprised, some think that we've met before, some just love sharing their experiences, and I guess there's a saying, Minnesota nice. They are all very nice people.
Mitzel Brock could say the same thing about the missionaries from when they spoke with him.
They were really nice, which is, I mean, pretty typical for apparently that religion, but it's not bad, and if you don't want to talk to them, they won't make you talk to them.
But being willing to talk about religion isn't the same thing as attending religious services.
We try to be here, we try to make ourselves known, but, you know, short of knocking on their door and dragging them out of bed and saying, get to church, you know, they're adults and they need to make a decision for themselves.
Addressing the issues young adults care about is one possible way for faith-based institutions to make students comfortable going to services.
We have been open to gay and lesbian people since the mid-1980s. This has been a congregation that looks carefully at issues on war, issues on economics, issues around poverty and immigration.
And that saints in venue, such as a student group like Lutheran Campus Ministry, can also be a better fit.
For some students is what they're looking for. You know, they don't want to be associated with a congregation. They'd much rather be associated with a student group.
Of course, many like Mitzel Brock's will continue to hold on to their beliefs in a higher power outside of organized faith.
It helps me to have confidence in myself that basically whatever choices I make, there's a reason that I'm thinking that.
For Culture Q, I am Parker Lemke.
Every week, Radio K selects one album to highlight, and this week we have selected local artist K-Radio and Simon's collaboration album Lucid Dreaming Skylines as our weekly release spotlight. Radio K contributor Jared Greenison wrote that the album is a carefully crafted micro-paracosm with Simon's liquid synths bubble and lift the warmth of K-Radio's vocals to new temperatures. K-Radio and Simon recently played a few tracks in Studio K and told everyone there that they felt this collaboration was long overdue. Simon chuckled a little bit when he mentioned the surprise at the overwhelming support from the others when he mentioned the idea of the off-the-cuff one evening. Having met via the internet, the two have been intrigued by each other's work, which started the conversation which would eventually lead to this record. From start to finish, the album runs like a dream and is about as focused as anyone in slumber. Sognor starts the album off with a beautiful instrumental with shoegaze thrills, and K-Radio teasing the rest of the album to come. Midway through, the record will envelop you, completely enthralling you with the sonic beats it brings to the table. Jupiter and Joyride, which we're listening to right now, are some of the best pop narratives to come out of the Twin Cities and feature the tamest saxophone this writer has ever heard. To read the full review of K-Radio and Simon's Lucid Dreaming Skylines and download a free track from the album, as well as watch their Studio K performance, go to RadioK.org. Sick of politicking, left the party at my side. You were in the indigo, I called you out to die. Maybe we were meant for making love, I treat you right. And you were in the barbecue in Salvador Dali. And I knew every word to every song that you would sing. It's everything to me. It's everything. This is how it starts. Boom, there goes my heart. Running from my chest because I'm falling in love with you, baby. Driving me insane when you say my name. Opening my third eye. Can I be in love with you, baby? When Lower Town Metal Venue Station 4 closed for HVAC renovations in the spring of 2013, Minnesota metal fans were disappointed, but relieved. Disappointed that they'd miss a whole summer's worth of fantastic shows, but relieved that when the venue reopened, they could enjoy their favorite bands without the constant looming threat of heatstroke in the venue's notoriously hot main room. However, when the bar abruptly announced that they would not be reopening as a metal club, fans debated whether the local scene could thrive without its headlining venue. Music reporter Nathan Gurdis investigates.
Save Station 4, cried all its fans in protest. Home to Minnesota's metal scene read all the eulogies online and in print. As a fan of metal music, I felt the anger and confusion that this ground zero of metal in the Twin Cities was being taken away from us. However, as I delved deeper into the local scene, I realized that Station 4 may have been the face of the Twin Cities metal scene, but it was not its heart.
Yeah, well, I went to all the... Saw like Immortal there, you know. Cool. Saw Arsis there about 5 times, you know. So yeah, we spent a lot of time at Station.
Pete Noteboom, member of local metal band Morality Crisis, remembers Station 4 fondly, but doesn't think that its loss will have a huge effect on bands coming to the cities.
The bigger shows that come through town, you know, they have definitely relocated places where they're playing the Myth or Mill City Nights, and you do wonder if just that normal venue being there would dissuade them from coming. At this point, I think bands that want to play Minneapolis will play Minneapolis, and those types of bands that need a bigger venue will find their bigger venue.
To get a venue's perspective on the matter, I also talked to Trevor E., who books bands for the Nomad World Pub, a West Bank venue that has been supporting the metal scene more and more in recent years.
So, because I think the market is there. It's just, you know, you have to seek out other venues, and there's plenty of venues in town, you know. There might not be, there's, you know, obviously one less large room for touring bands looking for, you know, it is easier for touring bands to book in town if there is a club that is kind of tailoring their calendar to that or their scene to that. But, you know, there's a lot of venues in town that kind of sway one way. I guess if I have to say, the Triple Rock would have probably been the one, or the Entry is a good spot for touring bands like that. And actually, talking to my friend Ross, who does sound down there, he's definitely told me that there's been a lot more like metal and kind of like screamo punk bands like doing like five band bills or something at the Entry. And he's...
Only time will tell if the loss of Station 4 will alter the schedules of touring metal bands. But so far, the prediction seems to be that it won't have too much of a negative impact. One thing that seems to be certain, however, is that the venue's closure will not kill the thriving local metal scene.
It had support in the way that, you know, you need to have local support on, you know, a lot of touring shows just to reinforce ticket sales, but... And I think that people, you know, bands supported it in the opportunities to open up for other bands, but I
kind of had a weird crowd where they would come out for bigger shows, but there wasn't much of an ingrained, like, local crowd that would go there for shows, it seemed. As for the local metal stuff, that didn't really affect us much at all, because those shows didn't really happen at Station 4 all that often. You'll find stuff all over Minneapolis, you know, that's where a lot of the stuff is focused, so Triple Rock, the Hexagon, Cause, the Medusa was really big before before it went down, plus, you know, just the house shows all over the place.
In fact, both men I interviewed seem to believe that the closure will actually help the local scene grow even stronger.
I think I think that the scene is going to probably be fine and, you know, probably be stronger because people are going to have to create a new scene somewhere else that'll be more support, you know, more generated by the bands that are doing it on the local level in town.
Pete has a perhaps more subtle view on the matter.
In my humble opinion, we should kick out all the outsiders. This is Minnesconsin. There's a certain way we do things here, and we don't need the influence from other places. Kick them out. Yeah, who cares who tours here? Music is regional. Music was regional at one point, and that's been destroyed by the internet. You know, we thought the internet was such a damn good idea. And, it just kind of destroyed, you know, regional identity. So, no, kick them out. Shut down all the big metal venues. Let us do it in our basements for, like, 8 of our friends. That's what it's all about.
The truth is, in metal, as in life in general, art always finds a way to survive and thrive. Even without Station 4, the Twin Cities metal scene will continue to live on. For Culture Q, I'm Nathan Gurdis.
In the studio with me, I have music reporter Nathan Gurdis. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing fantastic. And that was your first story.
That was my first story for Culture Q, and first story, just journalistic story in general.
How'd it go, man? How did you find it?
Well, you guys kind of threw me into the flames with it, but I think it went pretty well. I've got some good interviews, some good audio with people. Both Trevor and Pete were super great guys to talk to, had a lot of useful information and really good insights into the scene, and especially like their viewpoints on the scene.
Did they surprise you with their answers?
A little bit. I mean, I went in because I know a lot of people who really love sort of like the touring metal scene, these like mid-sized bands, and went to Station 4 a lot. So I went in and started talking to Pete, and I, you know, had some questions prepared sort of about Station 4, and essentially the first thing he says is it doesn't matter at all. It didn't mean anything to the scene. And I'm like, well, this interview's sort of just going on the tips of my toes now. But yeah, I think it turned out well, and I like being thrown for things, it makes for some interesting stuff.
Fantastic, man. And do you think we'll see like a similar venue, like a big metal venue in the future?
I think we're already sort of seeing it. Mill City Nights opened up pretty recently, and that's where pretty much all the big name like touring metal shows are going, and it's a ton of, they do different genres, but they've been hosting a ton of metal shows, and I think they're generally a little bigger than what Station 4 would host, but if there's a comparable venue, that would be it. But as far as the mid-size venues, yeah, I don't know if we'll see another one quite like that.
Great, thank you very much, Nathan. And that concludes this week's Culture Cue. Next week's program, we'll be looking at the past and future of prohibition and legalization of drugs and alcohol within Minnesota. Tune in and don't tell your mother about it. Thank you for listening to Culture Cue on Radio K, airing every Sunday at 6 p.m., bringing you all the stories from the Twin Cities that you won't hear anywhere else. Our producers are Amy Friedman, Parker Lemke, and Katie Bolin. Our music reporter is Nathan Goodis, who you just heard. Culture coach is Sarah Lemanchek, and I am Matt Curtis. You can find us on RadioK.org, PRX, and iTunes. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Culture Heritage Fund. See you next Sunday at 6 p.m. And thank you very much for listening.